Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, raw feeders. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffat, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Well, it is Friday. What does that mean? It means fabulous free tip Friday with Dr. Judy Jasek. Good morning, Dr. Jasek. How are you on this Friday morning?
Good. I'm doing good. I'm loving the spring weather here finally after our latest snowstorm. It's awesome to have it warming up. I got flowers blooming and exciting things going on with the business. And, you know, life is pretty good for the moment.
Give it a day.
I know, always seems to be changing. Like how I hedge to that a little bit.
Right. But you are doing some great work and we're getting great calls. People wanting to get on the raw diet. You know, I'm always amazed that people don't know about the raw diet, but there's a very small portion of the world feeding a fresh food diet. The majority of the world is still feeding toxic kibble. And I don't know how these companies, again, we've said this so many times, how they would ever move over into our market because it would be extremely expensive for them. You know, I suspect, Dr. Jasek, in any industry where whether it's human or pet, where they're really trying to advance human health, there are blockades everywhere. Isn't that weird?
Oh, yeah. Big time, big time. Even still, like going after, you know, human doctors, MDs that talk about certain topics, you know, it used to be, and it should be, that doctors could get together and talk about cases and share experiences and speak openly, and you find what works and you find what's in the best interest of your patient. Now there's just treatment protocols and it doesn't matter what's going on with the patient or whether they're working or not. This is the treatment protocol. This is what we use, end of story. And I see it in veterinary medicine too. There's just very little independent thought, logical thought. Oh, maybe, you know, so many pets are getting cancer. Maybe we should look at doing something different. I don't think that type of thing goes on. It's like, oh, let's try this. Oh, look, we got a brand new chemo drug that, you know, has been used on 10 pets or something. Let's try that. Let's not explore weird things like changing the diet or something. Let's try some new drug and see if that works. You know, it just, the line of thinking is just so hard to understand.
All right. So here's what I want to do today, Dr. Jasek. I want to give our listeners three questions on three different issues that they can ask the vet when they go in. And the reason I want you to ask your vet these questions is because it's going to flush out whether you should be working with that vet or not. All right. And here's what I mean by that. So a lot of people, Dr. Jasek, I'm sure that you see, certainly the people that I talk to, have their dogs on some type of pain medication, all right? Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before. They're called NSAIDs. Here's what I want you to ask your vet. When you go in and they say, we're going to put your dog, typically from arthritis or pain in the back ends or something like that, we're going to put your dog on these pain relievers. All right. And here's what I want you to ask your vet. Are you worried about suppressing the enzyme prostaglandin? How do you say that word?
Prostaglandin.
See, I never can. You know what? Why do they make these so difficult? Really?
That's what we go to doctor school for.
Oh, to learn how to pronounce
words. You just learn how to pronounce the big words. And then because other people haven't gone to school to learn how to pronounce them, we look really smart because okay. We can pronounce the big words.
Well, look, if I can't even pronounce, I've got to give them the right word. So it's prostaglandins.
Prostaglandin, right.
Prostaglandins. Are you worried about suppressing the enzyme prostaglandins. All right. Now, you may be saying, well, you know, why am I asking that? Well, because prostaglandins are responsible for a lot of things in your dog's body. And if you are suppressing these, you're going to be causing problems. And if your vet doesn't even know how to pronounce the word, maybe they do because they went to school, prostaglandins, then, you know, you're going to flesh this out. But so prostaglandins are enzymes and they're responsible for doing a lot of things like maintaining the blood circulation to the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
All right. They can also cause these NSAIDs, these pain relievers can cause ulcers in the stomach because why? Prostaglandins are an important component of the protective lining of the stomach and the upper intestine.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So they're NSAIDs, we talked about this before, Dr. Jasek, they can negatively affect liver function. They can cause hepatitis, enlarged liver, abdominal pain, fatigue, loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, and jaundice, just to name a few. So if you go into the vet and they say, we're going to put your dog on pain relievers, you want to ask the question, are you worried about suppressing the enzyme prostaglandin? You think that's a good question, Dr. Jasek?
Yeah, I think it would indicate whether or not the veterinarian read the package insert on that particular product. it would indicate if they knew exactly what it did in the body and what the potential side effects are. And hopefully then, you know, they wouldn't be using it indiscriminately. I mean, sometimes pets are in enough pain that we have to use some sort of pain relief, but you do it judiciously and you understand the potential side effects. And, you know, I think when it comes to pain in pets too, we have to be doing everything we can to get to the root cause. Like if it's a, you know, orthopedic thing, you know, pet's limping and it's not, something like a bone tumor or something like that, you know, I find so many pets will improve dramatically with chiropractic adjustments, acupuncture, massage, physical therapy, all this body work that, you know, a lot of people do. I do all that stuff for myself too. And my dog. And it helps tremendously. And that way, you know, you're getting to the root of the problem when you just slap them on a drug and you might mask the pain, but whatever that underlying problem is, it's just going to get worse. So if their back's out of alignment, it's just going to be more and more and more and more problems. And those drugs are hard on the body. I've seen, you know, quite a few dogs that were put on medications like that young, where they didn't get to the root cause of the problem. And by the way, I've seen pain decrease dramatically when we get pets off of the kibble, and which is inflammatory. And I've heard people say that many times, oh, they just feel so much better because their joints are not inflamed. So even that can help. So I think it's very important that we're doing all these other things to alleviate pain and get to the bottom of the problem and not just do the knee jerk, well, let's just slap them on some meds and, you know, because that's what people want. I've actually heard quite a few veterinarians over the years say that they truly believe that their customers are not going to be happy unless they walk out the door with a bottle of prescription or bottle of pills with a prescription, because that's what they come in for, is the bottle of pills. And I would adamantly disagree with that. I think most people want their pets better. And they don't necessarily want the pills. So if you start asking some questions about the pills and the pros and cons, and are there other things you can be doing, you know, maybe it'll wake up some brain cells in some of these veterinarians.
I don't know about that, but okay.
I know they have them because they went to school and they learned the big words.
And they learned how to say prostaglandin.
They can say prostaglandin.
So just so that people are aware of what some of the more common pain relievers are that are being prescribed, Remedil, the generic name, carprofen. But what are some of the other ones, Dr. Jasek?
So in that NSAID category, carprofen is, and if I'm going to use a drug in that class, like I just feel like pain, you know, pain medication is warranted. That's usually one that I use because it's been around the longest and because I'm old and it was the first one that came out. And I feel safer using drugs that have been around longer. Yeah, we know they might have some side effects, but they've been, that particular drug has been used so much in veterinary medicine that I feel like we know a lot about how to use it carefully and we know the side effects and know what to expect. But other drugs in that class, Galliprant is used pretty commonly,
yes.
Meloxicam, Piroxicam is used a lot in cancer patients because it has been shown to shrink some tumors, especially bladder tumors. And so that might be something I use, you know, so if we have something like a bladder tumor and the dog's having trouble peeing, this is not sustainable with life, right? They have to be able to pee. And we've done the other things. Like I don't do it as a first course, but if we're doing all these other things and the dog is still having trouble peeing, then I feel like it's worth a try. It's still safer than chemo or other things. So if we're running out of options, something like that might be worth a try, but it's very hard on the stomach. I've seen quite a few dogs like stop eating when they're on it. So it's a balancing act, right? Because they need to pee, but if it's upsetting their stomachs, they're not eating, you know, we have to consider that. And we have to look for, you know, side effects. It kind of amazes me sometimes how the dogs will be on these meds and people won't think about, well, maybe my dog's not eating well because these meds are upsetting its stomach, you know, but it needs the pain meds. But if the pain meds are keeping your dog from eating, you know, maybe we should look at some other options. You know, the meds never seem to get incriminated.
They don't. And you can have blood in the stools and dogs not eating the blood in the stools and they're calling me. And I'm like, is your dog on a pain reliever? Is your, you know, there's all these things.
Well, and just another thing, let me mention. So also in the same class of drugs on the human side are ibuprofen and aspirin. Those are extremely hard on a dog's gut. There is another veterinarian in the area here who's now retired that used to start dogs on aspirin left and right and long-term, like after they got to be like past middle age, he would just tell people to start their dogs on aspirin. And I saw a number of dogs hospitalized with serious GI bleeds. And you think, oh, it's just aspirin. Aspirin's pretty safe. It's, you know, all of these drugs are very irritating to the gut. And they do also interfere to some degree with blood clotting. I think there's some individual variation, but usually they will recommend, like if your pet's going to have surgery and is on an NSAID, they'll usually recommend stopping it for, you know, at least a week or 10 days prior because they can have effects. This is why my mom, it's been recommended to her that she take a low dose of aspirin every day because to prevent strokes. Well, why does it do that? Well, because it stops blood from clotting. So it actually prevents blood clots, but you get a bleeding ulcer from a drug that's preventing blood from clotting, you can get in serious trouble. And that's what happens. So don't use human NSAIDs ever. They're really hard on your dog.
And people. Okay.
Well, and people too, but you know, I can't tell people what to do for themselves, but
no, heck no, go ahead. Put all the toxins in yourself you want. All right. So here is the next question for the common thing that goes on in the veterinary clinics. In regards to a rabies vaccination, Dr. Jasek, the question that I think that would flush out whether you want to work with that vet or not, whether your vet actually has read the package inserts or really studied about the side effects. When you're going in to get a rabies shot, I would ask this. Are you concerned about neurological damage from the rabies vax? And that would be a very interesting response that I would, bless you, that I would like to know about, right? Because the rabies does travel to the amygdala, Right. So, Dr. Jessica, when we're talking about a rabies shot, there is this thing that we call rabies mayism. And we know that dogs can have a total personality change after a rabies vaccination. So, what do you think about that question? Are you concerned about neurological damage from the rabies vax?
I think that'd be a great question, because that would, you know, push the issue of true informed consent, which everybody is entitled to, but is rarely provided in the medical industry, whether veterinary or human, where there's an honest, open conversations. You know, what if your veterinarian said, well, yeah, your dog could start seizuring after the shot? Well, that would probably give you pause and make you think about, well, do I really want to do this? And what are the pros and cons? And what are the actual disease risks? You know, if my dog get, you know, is this vaccine even protective against, you know, the rabies virus, which now there's some report saying that the rabies virus has never actually been identified either, that viruses, that whether or not viruses exist, as we've been taught they do, is becoming rather controversial. So that's a very, very interesting and sometimes kind of mind-boggling topic. But I think you need to look at, is that shot really protecting your dog against anything? So let's look at the incidence, you know, of, you know, supposed rabies. I mean, there's, as far as I know, in this area where we live, I don't think there's been a case of rabies in dogs in like over 60 years or something. It's almost a non-existent thing. So why are we putting our pets at risk for a disease that has virtually been eliminated? And I know what they say is that, you know, well, if we stop vaccinating, it'll come back. Well, will it?
Let's wait and see. Let's see. Can we try?
Let's see. And is it really about protecting our pets, or is it more about making money for the vaccine industry? Because that's what I think about, you know, when, you know, things are sold, you know, just sort of blindly. And, you know, with rabies, I hear the same, you know, over and over again, oh, well, you know, if you don't have your dog vaccinated for rabies, like to go into a clinic, you're putting all our staff here at risk. Like, oh, really? God. Like, it, and I tell people, tell me this. And it's, you know, I think about that and like, well, okay, if you really knew how rabies, the disease, actually acted, you would know that for a dog to be able to transmit rabies, it has to be symptomatic. Like it, because the way it's transmitted, it travels on the nerves and has to get into the saliva in order to be transmitted in a bite. So at that point, it's already gone to the brain. So it would be almost impossible for a dog to transmit rabies without having symptoms. So I would ask somebody that said that, well, don't you know how to diagnose? This is a medical clinic. Can't you diagnose if my dog has rabies or not? And if you can't, maybe think about going someplace else. If they don't even know what the disease looks like, what are they so afraid of some like invisible monster? But, you know, back to your point about asking about the neurologic stuff. Yeah, I think that's a very valid question, but also realize that a lot of the side effects of vaccines go unrecognized. I tend to recognize them because I look for it. And I make that, you know, correlation. You know, we had a dog we started treating around the first of the year, puppy, she's going on a trip for Christmas, like a 6-month old pup, got the rabies shot. And this dog got a substantial like polyarthritis, extremely painful that we treated for several months before we could get this dog comfortable again. So, and I've seen dog seizure. I've seen behavior problems. I mean, dogs turn on a dime. If you ever hear somebody say, you know, my dog was just like fine and easy to train, and now it's like, it gets grumpy and it's aggressive with other dogs. We've had these changes. man, see if that was timed with the rabies shot, because it can absolutely happen. And we can help too with homeopathy and detoxifying and supporting the body. We can help eliminate these side effects. But yeah, start quizzing the vets and asking them if they actually know the adverse effects, potential adverse effects of what they're putting in your pet's body.
Well, you mentioned the symptoms that you were talking about. Here's a few more, okay, that would be associated that in rabies mayism. Hypersensitivity of all sensitive of all senses. That's sound, movement, touch. Mm-hmm. Rage, which you talked about, maybe they're now agitated very easily. They have sudden unprovoked attacks. Inappropriate responses to water, either in extreme fear or great desire. This is known as hydrophobia, which is another term for mm-hmm. what? Rabies. Obsessive compulsive behaviors. They say, you know, you may think this is cute, tail chasing, fly biting, chasing light reflections off a window or mirror, but this is a neurological issue. Excessive focal licking or licking of genitalia, okay? Involuntary urination, sensation of flea bites, which is violent itching with no obvious causation. That's a big call for me. My dog is itching, itching, itching. What's wrong with this food? I got to change my food. Da-da-da.
How about when did that pet have the last rabies shot? Yep.
It's just so crazy. So there's an article by Dogs Naturally, Dr. Jasek, 65 ways a rabies shot can harm your dog. And I think that you just have to start asking these questions. Again, the onus is on us to push back on that vet who's standing there in front of you. Are you concerned about neurological damage from the rabies vax? And if they say, no, we don't see it, we never see it, you better take your dog right out of there. Just say, you know what? Let me think about it. I'll get back to you.
Yeah, because if they're not seeing it, they're not looking. They're not acknowledging that vaccines have side effects. And I know they're not, because I see so many sick pets end up going in and getting, you know, booster shots for something or other. And, you know, they're already sick. Their body's already inflamed. And now we're going to, you know, mess them up even more, you know. And I think I've wondered for years, you know, why do dogs have so many phobias? Why are dogs afraid of thunderstorms? Thunderstorms are a natural thing. Why should dogs be afraid of thunderstorms? But I really think it, like, this disruption in normal neurologic function from things like the rabies shot, the distemper shot too, can cause some disruptions in normal neurologic function. And I think that that can be part of it. And I've started, you know, on some of our itchy skin dogs that are just so hard to figure out what's going on with them and give the dogs some relief. I've started using some more like anti-anxiety herbs, just calming herbs, and helps. Not all of them, but it does help in some, where we can just kind of take the edge off. And like you said, this obsessive stuff where, you know, the Labrador, they can never put their ball down and, you know, things like that. And not that, you know, I mean, that's somewhat a trait of the breed, but some of these over the top behaviors, yeah, I think they can absolutely be induced by something like the rabies shot, especially when they get it really young and in combination with 6 or 7 other vaccines all at the same time. And the poor puppy is, you know, 4 months old and they're getting spayed or neutered on the same day. I mean, good Lord, these poor dogs don't even have a chance.
No, they don't. So we want to arm you with some questions. So the third question, because this is a big one, this is something that you are great at, Dr. Jasek, is not doing combo shots. Here's the question that you want to ask when you're going in for these shots. Are you worried about overwhelming or confusing the immune system with this combo shot? Okay. Very interesting. I hope that people ask these questions and then they can come back to us and let us know what their vets have said, because a lot of people may not even understand what a combo shot is, Dr. Jasek, but you know, the rabies shot is a single shot with only the rabies virus. But the combination vaccines, they have multiple modified live viruses mixed with virus bacteria. And so we call them, you know, toxic soup, right? So you want to ask the vet, are you worried about overwhelming or confusing the immune system? Dr. Jasek, talk to us a little bit about why you don't do combination shots and what you do instead.
Well, I think shots in general can be very disruptive to the immune system. And one of the big reasons is it's not a natural route of exposure. So say a dog were going to be exposed to the parvovirus. The way it would be exposed in nature is it literally has to eat some poop from a dog with parvo. And that's not that big of a stretch because dogs eat poop all the time. But when we inject it into the body, the immune system, when there's a natural exposure, the immune system, there's steps that the immune system, you know, recognizes an antigen. And then there's a cascade of events where the immune system normally will react to that antigen and build an immunity and start to build a defense. But when you bypass all that and you just inject it, you know, you might get a measurable antibody level, so you're doing a titer test, but then the immune system can't always eliminate either the antigen or the preservatives and other chemicals that are in the vaccine. And even when you give just one, it can be disruptive to the immune system. But then you inject them with 5, 6, 7 different things all at once. And, you know, I know this is why we see young dogs. I see this all the time, like, you know, 8 to 12 months, just starting to itch like crazy, or, you know, they have diarrhea. And then, you know, like, well, they just had all of these puppy shots. And not only are they getting a bunch at one time, but then they get that over and over, sometimes 3 or 4 times. And we've really disrupted normal immune system function. And the body just is, the immune system is just overactive. And I think there can be like kind of like tag along proteins or other things that the body does begin to react to if they're present at the same time they have this vaccine reaction. So sometimes what the dog's eating or what it's being exposed to at the time that it's vaccinated, and the body goes through this whole reaction reacting to this vaccine, and say the pollen counts are really high or the grass just started growing and the dog's then exposed to that. Well, the body might react, you know, remember, has a memory of reacting to that at the same time and might continue to react to it. So, you know, it's just something to kind of keep in mind that when you're stepping up the reactivity of the immune system, it could end up reacting to other things along the way too.
So if you're looking at your vet bill, you're going to know if you have a combo shot because you're going to have all these letters, DHLPP, DHLPPC, DA2LPPC, 5-way, 6-way, 7-way. I mean, they're all of these different combo shots. Now, I was looking at this article and it said, look, vets in large corporate practices, and you and I have seen the overtaking of independent practices like crazy. But that vet that's at that particular practice may not like the combo shots, but they may be under orders to use them. They have to go and do what these corporate practices tell them to do. However, you do not have to stay there. And the question is, when you get your card and you're going in, you want to say, what's in this shot? Is it a monovalent single shot? Is it a combo shot? You don't want to do these combos. You want to ask them, why does my dog need that? And what are the adverse effects?
Okay. And scrutinize the answers too. You know, I mean, I think these are really great questions to ask, but if, you know, the veterinarian just is in complete denial and just says, oh no, these are like perfectly safe, I would go running for your pet's life. Get out of there.
Right.
Because they have to, if they're really being honest, they would have to acknowledge something. I mean, just read the package insert. I mean, there's going to be something on there that should be, you know, some form of a warning for the veterinarian or potential side effects. If they tell you, oh, these are just perfectly safe, can't do any harm. Yeah, I would get the heck out of there, because it is a selling game. And where that comes from is from the pharmaceutical companies that are making these vaccines. So the veterinarians are at that point are just listening to the sales pitch. They're not reading the package inserts. They're not paying attention to their patients and just watching the trends. When do symptoms show up, you know, or are symptoms showing up, you know, in conjunction with the vaccine or, you know, recent vaccine? If they say, oh, they're perfectly safe, they're really not looking into it properly. So be careful. There's always pros and cons, you know, to anything, especially anything that comes out of the pharmaceutical industry. I think there's some natural things that maybe don't have too many cons, but you know, any pharmaceutical is going to have a potential downside. And if they don't fess up to that, then yeah, I'd move on.
Well, veterinarian Dr. Patricia Jordan, she's the author of the book Mark of the Beast. That's a good name of the book. But she writes about one manufacturer's combo shot. And she said, the absolutely worst adverse vaccine reactions have been noted with the mumbo jumbo polyvalent, that's the combo, several modified light viruses, killed whole bacterians of leptospirosis, killed coronavirus, and she puts in parentheses, the vaccine looking for a disease. But she says lots of adjuvant, mercury, aluminum. She said, look, the proprietary ingredients of whose true identity makes me shudder to even speculate. So basically, she's saying it's terrible to do these. You look at what the author Catherine Diodati, D-I-O-D-A-T-I, a vaccine guide for dogs and cats. She says the number of pathogens plus toxic and carcinogenic chemicals that the animals are exposed to all at once generate an enormous toll on the immune system, and the results can be devastating. So when I'm up against, Dr. Jasek, a dog, like we're talking about itching, having all these problems, and raw food, people are calling me wondering, you know, what's in the raw food? Why is my dog not reacting? Why can my dog not eat raw food? It ain't the raw food. Okay. That is just simply meat, bones, organ, fat, some tripe, some veggies, right? There's nothing in there. Granted, the dog can have issues because something else has caused them to have issues, but it causes me to pull my hair out sometimes, Dr. Jasek. And I would imagine it causes you the same issue.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And that's why, you know, we've talked about this so many times, you know, drilling down and making sure we know everything in the pet's routine, you know, what treats is it getting? Are they doing heartworm? I mean, I still run into this all the time where people, you know, are told, even here in Colorado in the middle of winter, they got to supposed to keep their dogs on heartworm prevention year round. Flea and tick, not so much here, but I know in other parts of the country, it's, you know, highly encouraged to be doing that year round. Well, you know, okay. So maybe you live somewhere where there's a big problem with fleas, but if your dog is having, you know, symptoms of, you know, any kind of inflammation and you're putting this drug that's a neurotoxin in their body every month, you know, don't you think maybe that could be having an effect? You know, I sure do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I sent a new customer over to your website, ahavet.com today, because she was scheduled to go in for another heartworm shot. And I was like, before you do that, would you like to get more information? Right? Because I think that informed consent is not being given. And if you know that things can be deadly, toxic, immune compromising, maybe you are not going to do that. But I suspect that it's because most people don't have this information. They have no idea. Mm-hmm. that this can be damaging.
And don't do these long lasting things. I think there's a heartworm shot out now that's supposed to last a year. Ugh. Don't put something in your dog's body that you can't take back out. I mean, at least if you give it once a month and the dog reacts to it, well, it's going to get out of his body and then we can help support it and detox it and not do that again. But if your dog reacts that, you're subjecting it to a whole year. And there was a shot, it was called ProHeart. I don't know what they're calling this new one, years ago, that was supposed to be good for 6 months. You just give it in the spring. Nobody has to remember anything. You know, their dog's covered, and it was pulled from the market. So when things get pulled because of side effects, you know, the pets weren't reacting well to it. So when things get pulled from the market and they come back on the market, yeah, I really question, did they really change anything? Or, you know, they just, you know, hoping that all those pets have died by now and that the veterinarian is giving them and maybe have moved on or don't remember. And there's a bunch of new vets out there that won't remember. So let's just revisit this. Be really, a lot of the flea and tick preventatives now are 3 months. You can't take that stuff out of the body. So if you're going to do anything like that, do it very judiciously, you know, only if absolutely necessary, depending on where you live. And, you know, do the monthly products. Don't do these long lasting things.
Right. Right. And get over and get a consult with Dr. Judy Jasek and her team. Unless your vet is a raw feeding vet, unless your vet is a holistic minimalist in toxins, you know, I don't know that you're going to get the best advice. You've got to get over and deal with somebody who's been feeding raw for a long time, who's seen both sides of the roads, who can help you get through all this craziness, this misinformation, or just this one narrative.
Or just, you know, just to hear a different side. You know, it's not obligating you to anything. And, you know, we do telemedicine. We can just, you know, we can do a phone call or a video call and, you know, just hear another side of the story. And then just what feels best to you? What sounds more, you know, more logical and what really makes sense and what you're seeing in your pet. Cause I say things that are based on my experience, what I've actually seen in practice. And so it comes from true real life experiences. And that's why I think a lot of people can relate to how we do things here because they're sharing those experiences and they really look at what's happening. What's the timeline? Oh, you had all these puppy vaccines. And then you're all of a sudden you got a, you know, 6 or 8 month old puppy that's scratching like crazy. Well, do you think that's like just a coincidence? Like, no, probably not. You know, it's the food isn't the whole story, but I think you need to look at, it is going to help your pet in the long run. It's just not necessarily going to make all these symptoms from the vaccines magically go away. We still have to work through that. And sometimes it just takes time and it might take a year or more to get all this out of your pet's body. If they've had multiple vaccines, multiple times, you know, I can guarantee you that your dog's going to be a lot worse off in the long run if you keep them on a kibble diet. And especially if you do the suppressive medicine, the Apoquil or the Cytopoint, just to help with the symptoms that are showing up. You have to have some patience. You have to be willing to work through this and it can be done. But once you start using those suppressive drugs, I have a heck of a time anymore getting pets off of Apoquil because they have such the strong rebound effect. You know, it makes the symptoms go away, but it's not treating anything. It's keeping your pet from itching or chewing on its feet or whatever it's doing. It's all it's doing is suppressing symptoms. And you have to bite the bullet and get them off of that if you want them to heal. And I know it's tough because they flare up like mad when you pull them off of it. Cause you're just suppressing the immune system. It's like pushing down on a spring. You release that pressure. And what does that spring do? It goes boing, you know, like all over the place. And that's kind of what the immune system does. And we are things we can help to support that process. But you do to a certain extent, just have to ride it out. And the people that I've seen that will ride that out, and give the pet's body a little bit time, bit of time to kind of re-regulate itself, along with some support for, you know, the immune system, those pets will fare much better. But, you know, in cases where you're bouncing back and forth off of these immunosuppressive drugs, it's, you have to get them off of it, off of them completely in order to have a true resolution.
I had someone call me yesterday, their dog's been on Apoquil for 2 years, still itching. And actually she felt like the itching was starting to be more prevalent. And I said to her, listen, and she said, I need to try to get him off Apoquil. Well, Apoquil just is naturally going to stop working after a certain amount of time. But I said, you really need to work with Dr. JC because you can't just pull these guys off of Apoquil. But is it different for every dog on how you wean them off? Or do you have a specific protocol to begin to start weaning them off? How do you do that?
Usually, I mean, of course, you know, the first thing we talk about is making sure they're on a, you know, species appropriate diet, you know, so we're not adding more to the problem by having them on a kibble diet that's inflammatory. We're not giving them other meds. So if we can stop things that we can stop, like heartworm, flea and tick, and this other stuff that they're on that's making the body work to process it, we eliminate as many things as we can. And then I usually do some herbal support. And then sort of as a general rule, I'll start cutting the dose in half. So like whatever milligram they're giving per day, we'll cut that in half for like 10 to 14 days and to kind of see how the pet does. If the pet like immediately starts itching, we might need to keep it at that dose for a while, allow some of these other things to start to support the body. Because when we start herbs and other support, you know, that takes some time. You know, sometimes we got to go out a month or so before we're going to see, you know, a significant change from these other things that we've started. And so if we go out 10 to 14 days and things are going pretty well, then we cut the dose in half again, either the daily dose or sometimes we'll go every other day. So staying on the same dose every other day essentially is still cutting the dose in half. But eventually, I mean, I like to get to that every other day because then you're giving the body a longer gap in between the pills. So I always like to get to a point where we're going every other day and then start dropping that dose down, depending on how the pet's doing. Sometimes we'll go out maybe twice a week for a couple of weeks, you know, just to make sure that we're, you know, kind of keeping things stable and then giving the herbs and the other things we're doing a little bit more time. So that's, you know, that's usually what I do. But how quickly we can get them off of it, that does vary with the pet's response and, you know, the patient's threshold of the, you know, pet parent. And I get it. You know, if your dog is itching so bad, it's keeping it up at night and I understand that it's challenging, but I'm just saying, if you don't get them off of those meds, you're going to end up treating cancer or something more serious. Cause the reason the pets keep getting worse and worse and worse is because you're not addressing the underlying issues. You're just suppressing symptoms. And what suppressing symptoms does is it allows the underlying cause of the itching to just build and get worse. And that's why at some point they stop responding, because the underlying issue is continuing to get worse. And if you just suppress this inflammation and you're suppressing these symptoms, eventually you're going to end up with worse diseases like cancer, autoimmune disease.
Right, right. All right, everybody. I hope that today we've given you some questions, some ways to flush out the best health professional for you and your pet. And get over to ahavet.com. You can talk with Dr. Jasek. They can Zoom with you. You can come see her in Colorado. Whatever you need, they are there for you. Get your dog on a species appropriate diet. That's, you got to do that. You got to get the processed food out. Give your dog a fighting chance, especially if they've been subjected to all of these other things. But again, we would like for you to hit it from all angles. All right.
And just because it's April Fool's Day, don't you be fooled.
That's right. It's my brother's birthday. So when my mom was pregnant with my brother, she called her mom and said, hey, I'm going to the, you know, the hospital to have this baby, and they thought it was an April Fool's joke.
Oh, it's like, okay, ha ha ha, have fun with that. Huh?
Yeah, right, right. All right, everybody, get over to rawdogfoodandco.com. We ship the raw everywhere that UPS goes, because here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business, and friends, don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.